Hello, and welcome to the 20th episode of Talking Global Infrastructure, the monthly podcast from the Global Infrastructure Investor Association. Here at GIIA, we like to bring you different voices from across our team. So for this episode, you're with me, Sophia Taylor, Membership Officer here at GIIA. And we're celebrating because we've just announced that GIIA has passed the 100 member milestone. And as well as that, we're on the road to Berlin, to the Infrastructure Investor Global Summit, where literally thousands of investors and advisors have just gathered from around the world for what is almost certainly the industry's biggest conference. I'm with GIIA's Chief Executive, John Phillips, who's been with the association since shortly after it was launched back in 2016. Now, John, we've just passed the magic marker post of 100 members. How has GIIA changed and grown since the beginning?
GIIA has grown in a number of ways. I was employee number 3, and now we're at 10 full-time staff, plus our US advisor, David Quam. So we've certainly grown the team in that time. As you've said, we've also grown significantly in terms of the number of members, but also the range of organisations we represent. We started with around 25 founding members who came together to establish GIIA, and now we're just past that 100 mark, and our membership list contains most of the very big funds through to many of the mid-market players, and now includes a growing number of smaller or even startup funds who see the value in our network. So I think we've grown the range as well as the quantity of members that we attract. We've also grown in terms of the markets we focus on. We started out very much focused on the UK and Europe, but we've certainly grown our expertise and our impact in the US as one of the key markets now. And we're starting to turn our attention even further afield. And finally, I'd say we've grown significantly in the range of activity and the program that we undertake to bring value to our members, whether that is through our advocacy, the range of events that we host, the research that we undertake and publish, and the insights that we share with our members through the various events and working groups that we run. So the whole kind of breadth of the work that we do has grown significantly in that time.
And looking forward, John, where do you see the GIIA in a few years' time?
We must remain agile and responsive to what is most important to our members. As everyone knows, there are some big elections coming up this year in all of the main markets, and we must be well placed to ensure that the voice of investors is heard by those who will form policy and shape policy over the next probably decade or more. So it's a really important time for us to be really on the button in terms of what's being said and thought about from a policy perspective. You know, governments around the world are increasingly looking for the private sector to take a lead role in closing the infrastructure gap, but they don't always understand or buy into the idea that they are competing for that pool of international capital. So we must continue to help them through our dialogue to understand what's going to be needed. We are also mindful that we're a global body and there are other markets where we must build our expertise, our network of members over the next few years. So particularly Asia and LATAM as the obvious areas.
John Phillips there on the future for the Global Infrastructure Investor Association. Now, among the new joiners taking GIIA beyond our 100 member mark is one from Australia, the country where our industry began long before GIIA had been founded. I caught up with Mark Hector, head of infrastructure at the superannuation fund Aware Super, and asked him how the industry has developed since it first began back in Oz in the mid-1990s.
Sure. Thanks, Sophia. Happy to. And I should just say at the outset that we're quite excited to be the 100th member of GIIA. And as an Australian investor that's just opened up an office in the UK, it seems appropriate to perhaps metaphorically raise the bat in celebration. Look, I think the Australian, both federal and state governments, they started privatising infrastructure assets or otherwise entering into long-term concessions way back in the 1990s. Those sorts of assets included airports, seaports, toll roads, and different kinds of utilities. So originally, the private sector was really buying existing assets from government. We've come a long way since then, though, where the private sector is quite often building brand new infrastructure or expanding existing infrastructure, including even taking early stage development risks as well. I think those traditional types of asset classes from the 1990s, they're still valued today, but there's no doubt the sector has evolved a long way into many other subsectors since then, including social infrastructure, PPPs, renewables, and much broader energy transition, like transmission and storage, and more recently, a big growth in data and digital related deals from towers, fiber, data centers, and even within Australia, we've been involved in some land and motor vehicle registries, which has some heavy digitization elements as well. I think I'd comment too that the original asset classes going back a few decades ago tended to be more regulated monopolies that were almost more bottom drawer style investments that didn't need a lot of operating expertise to grow businesses. But I think there's no doubt, particularly in the last decade, the sector's moved more towards PE style like operating businesses with, you know, complex and well-developed business plans to continue to grow businesses and find more value. So we're seeing a much greater need for very skilled day-to-day management teams, and also from the investor community, morphing away from just having the skills to do upfront due diligence and origination and execution, but also moving into more skilled active asset management as well.
And you touched on there the kind of expansion of the asset class throughout geographies. Now, you've actually opened an office in London quite recently in order to deploy more capital into Europe. I wonder if you could just talk us through some of the opportunities that you see in Europe specifically.
Yeah, we very much have a long-term mindset. We're not here to take advantage of merely short-term opportunities. Having said that, I think our timing is reasonably fortuitous in the sense that in the new macro environment with rising rates and inflation over the last couple of years, there's definitely been a pause for digestion from the investor community about what that means in terms of kind of new valuations for assets where we deploy our incremental capital as well. So, you know, we definitely are looking for some better value. I think the European market over the last several years has probably been the most competitive infrastructure market globally, where returns have, you know, come down to very competitive levels. We have seen that, you know, unwind a little bit in the last, you know, couple of years. So we are looking for some better value opportunities for our members. I think the UK and Europe is very, very well developed across pretty much all asset classes. So we can see a really sizable universe of potential opportunities to invest into. It's a more diverse market than North America, which is more of an energy-based market. There's an enormous need around the globe, including in the UK and Europe, to go through energy transition and greater digitization in particular. They're the two big themes, surprise, surprise, that we're looking at, as well as a lot of our peers. So we can certainly see a lot more opportunities, in particular within the UK and Western Europe as our focus areas.
Well, thank you so much, Mark, for your observations today. Some really insightful comments there, and obviously celebrating you're joining us and our 100-strong membership. So thank you so much for your time today, Mark, and look forward to working with you and the team closer in the coming months.
Thank you for having me, and we're looking forward to enjoying the fruits of membership. Thanks, Sophia.
Now, let's head over to Europe ourselves, where thousands of people have just gathered in Berlin for our industry's annual global get-together, and where the caterers were busy topping up wine glasses as I caught up with another new member.
I'm here at GIA's annual reception for our members here in Berlin with many of the leading voices in the industry. And I'm joined at the moment by Victor Katz, who's co-founder of Augment Infrastructure. They're a US-based fund manager that focuses on renewable energy and sustainable infrastructure in Asia and Latin America. Now, Victor, you're well known to GIA because in a previous role, you actually helped create the association. And now we're delighted that you're back as one of our newest members, pushing us over the 100-member milestone. Now, a lot has happened since GIA was founded, but from your perspective particularly, how have you seen the importance of emerging markets grow for infrastructure investors?
Thank you, Sophia. Really glad to be back. It's been, you know, quite a good number of years, but GIA is always my family. I mean, so many friendships that, you know, we've made here. So many good business partnerships over the years. So would have been big oversight for us as a business to not come back. So let me just put it this way. But, you know, lots of things have changed. I mean, our industry has become, you know, much bigger. I mean, a lot of capital has gone into, you know, infrastructure. you know, from, you know, what I remember, you know, when GIA was just being formed, you know, there was a big reason, you know, for the organization to advocate for, you know, the sector and, you know, really show to policymakers, to investors around the world that it's an asset class that is mature enough that it can contribute to, you know, the society as a whole. Yeah. It has a lot of, you know, benefit, economic benefit to bring, you know, to countries. And I think a lot of it has been proven. I mean, the last few years have not been easy, just overall for, you know, for the world. Obviously, COVID didn't help and a lot of geopolitical tension. But I think generally, you know, people continue to believe that infrastructure as an investable asset, as an asset class, is has performed quite well. And I think it's true, you know, all across the world, you know, whichever countries we look at. We mostly focus on what we call growth markets. So emerging markets is a useful term, but we kind of try to define it, you know, slightly differently as growth markets. And I think that what we are seeing is that in many of those markets, there is a lot of momentum to build. You know, there is a lot of momentum to grow. And there is lots of, you know, good companies that can really change, you know, the way, you know, entire industries, you know, function, whether you look at renewable energy, whether you look at digital infrastructure. So it's quite exciting. It's quite exciting, you know, to be there. I am, you know, really glad that GIA is making an effort to an outreach, you know, to many of, you know, the members from, you know, those countries and also to governments. We, you know, on our part, will try to make a contribution, you know, to this effort. So really glad to be back. You know, lots of things have changed, but glad to see same people, yeah. Same faces, same friends.
And, you know, in these growth markets, you know, you mentioned there's a lot of building happening. Discussions over the past week or so have highlighted that there's a lot of opportunity there to build in a sustainable yeah. way. And obviously with yourselves, kind of that sustainable infrastructure strategy is a big part of what you do. Yes. Could you just talk us a little bit more about how you're making those positive changes in the building process in these growth markets?
Yes. Well, just think about it. I mean, somebody said, I forget who it was, you know, demographics is destiny, right?
Right.
And when you have, you know, hundreds of millions of people, you know, in emerging markets who do not have access to, you know, water, sanitation, you know, power, you know, you need to create all of that infrastructure for, you know, those economies to prosper. And by now, I think we have a kind of micro situation where, you know, that kind of economic impetus and capital is actually available. I mean, just look at India, you know, how much capital is flowing into the country and how much building, you know, they're doing. And and actually what we have right now is a very interesting kind of moment in time where, you know, technological advancement has really allowed us, you know, when we're building new infrastructure, to build it in a sustainable way. I mean, solar, you know, wind, they don't need subsidies anymore. Actually, economically, they're they have parity with, or actually better, you know, than many of the fossil fuel, you know, sources. And in some countries, it just makes sense. It's cheap energy. It's energy that is close to consumer. It has reasonable impact, small impact on environment, and which you can also mitigate. So it's a great story to tell, and we are quite excited about what can happen, you know, going forward. Technology plays a big role. You know, regulators play, you know, a very important role. There's a lot of regulatory support across the world for, you know, sustainable infrastructure, for sustainable development. A lot of it doesn't just go into renewable energy, but, you know, sectors like water, for instance, you know, is, you know, obviously you have green as a theme, you know, going across the world. Many of, you know, the big corporates, they have what they call net zero policy right now. So when a corporate goes to buy power, they want to buy power that's green. So that is, we're seeing it in all countries. Doesn't matter, emerging markets, growth markets, or OECD markets. And I think it's a big driver for us and generally for the infrastructure sector going forward.
Victor Katz of Augment Infrastructure there, talking about how private investment continues to spread worldwide from the roots that were first established 30 years ago. But, and perhaps surprisingly, given that it's a highly developed economy, there is one growth market that's perhaps bigger than all the rest. And as I found out talking to another leading investor in Berlin, that country is the United States.
I'm now speaking to Gautam Bhandari, Chief Investment Officer at I2 Capital, an independent global infrastructure manager with over $37 billion worth of assets under management. And you're focused on investing in North America, Europe, Asia, and Latin America. And that spans utilities, energy, digital infrastructure, transport, environmental infrastructure, and social infrastructure. So it's a very broad remit. There's been a lot of discussion recently, not least in this past week in Berlin, about how the United States has somewhat rapidly become one of the most desirable destinations for private investment in infrastructure. What are the trends that you've seen recently that are driving this? And what more is there to be done to make the United States a more competitive destination for investment on the global stage?
So you're absolutely correct. First of all, thank you for having me. And I think as you step back on your particular question on the United States, US actually went through a big phase of infrastructure build out post the war. And I think the country did end up spending 8 to 9% of its GDP building out a fantastic infrastructure. And it was really the basis of on how the country progressed post-war and really took the lead. I think subsequently, if you look at the infrastructure spend as a percentage of GDP, it actually declined into the 2-3% range. And over time, as you know, all infrastructure does age. There has been a rapid change in how we as humans want to use energy, what type of energy, renewables, and a lot of that did not exist 40, 50 years ago or even 30 years ago, right? So US over time, I think, saw its edge being lost out because infrastructure is really the rail on which, you know, industries can become competitive, citizens can enjoy better service. And I think what has happened over time is that I think subsequent governments and presidents have recognized it, have acknowledged it. And I think if you remember Bill Clinton or after that, George Bush and Obama, everybody talked about an infrastructure bank, something to do with infrastructure. I think there's bipartisan support for it, but nothing really got done. As the Inflation Reduction Act came along, President Biden saw a good opportunity to, in fact, pass that. It took the big step. So there's a lot of catch-up to do for US. And it's the first clear message that the country is serious about it. And, you know, as the US goes through another election cycle, I think both sides do agree that there is unanimity around infrastructure. So there's a lot of hope.
Is there any particular sector that you find the most important to focus on over the next few years? Is there any one that's particularly exciting for you in terms of opportunity?
Look, I think US is a massive economy, huge sort of productivity, and largely the sector that has been privatized and has benefited from it is frankly just the energy infrastructure, right? So whether it be oil pipelines or renewable plants or gas-fired plants, they're all private. But what hasn't actually come to get the benefit of private capital are the transportation assets. There's occasional, like there's the JFK Airport, which is a good example of a public-private partnership. But this is a long way to go.
So how do you think the US goes about achieving these goals? What are the barriers or impediments that you're seeing to success?
Look, I think one of the biggest impediments is actually having a system or a process, what I call a common concession framework. So it's rather simple to do. You know, you can copy or frankly, you can advocate and with consultation come up with a reasonable framework for a sector. And then as long as you have the same contract and you allow for open bidding, I think that gives the private sector a lot of confidence because it's a standardized concession framework that people can understand that has tested, you know, between arbitration and law and will attract a lot of capital. So a good way to speed up that private participation is to standardize things. If you can standardize things, you will actually benefit the consumers because you get the lowest price, you have transparency, and actually a lot of infrastructure that really gets built at the state level and the county level then and those officials can then rely on a standard contract and not be accused later of not doing it correctly or running a process that is not fair and transparent. So that's at least our big learning from investing in, you know, about 80-odd countries globally. Mm-hmm. Countries that have done that well have used standardized contracts.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And I'm sure those thoughts will be reflected in our Infrastructure Pulse survey.
Absolutely.
Where we talk to our members about their sentiment on different markets. Well, Gautam, it's been so lovely to speak with you. And I won't keep you much longer because I know there's a party happening next door. But it's been fabulous to speak with you. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Sophia.
Well, that's all from a very lively Berlin. It was great to see so many of our members there and to celebrate GIIA becoming the voice for more than 100 members worldwide. If you're interested in joining, do get in touch. And a final word from our CEO, John Phillips.
Hosting our reception in Berlin this year was just a great experience. When you look around the room and see so many familiar faces, for those who had the foresight to create GIIA 8 years ago and are still there supporting us, as well as the many new faces that have come along since to join what we call our community of industry leaders.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Global Infrastructure. Please do subscribe to us on Spotify and iTunes. Don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time.